Welcome to the Lynn Rivers Show. I'm Lynn Rivers. Recently, the country has seen occupations and evictions, angry speeches and peaceful demonstrations. Those in the so-called 99% have railed against the privilege, prosperity, and impunity of the top 1%. Both sides claim to represent what is good about America, but yet we are seeing another skirmish in the historical war between elitism and populism. One of my guests today was a populist long before populism was cool. The other is promoting a change to the U.S. Constitution to right what he sees as a historical wrong, the legal recognition of corporations as persons. Today, it's about change, social, political, and constitutional. Joining me to talk about the social and political unrest sweeping the country is Jim Hightower. Jim Hightower is the real deal, a former politician, social commentator, activist, and populist in the aw shucks mold of Will Rogers. Like Rogers, he often makes his point with humor and with pinpoint accuracy. He is the author of Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. He maintains the website, jimhightower.com, and he publishes a newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. Well, as he puts it, he has spent three decades battling the powers that be on behalf of the powers that ought to be: consumers, working families, environmentalists, small businesses, and just plain folks. Jim Hightower, welcome to the Lynn Rivers Show.
Lynn, it's a joy to be with you and all the emulians out there.
Yes. Well, you know, I mentioned populism. You were a populist before being populist was cool.
Right. Yes. And actually, the real populism, too, as opposed to the Sarah Palin faux corporate-sponsored populism.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But yeah, going back to the old, you know, Mary Helen Lees out of Kansas, who said it's time to the farmers who were being ripped off at the time by the railroad monopolies and the banks, she said to those farmers, it's time to raise less corn and more hell. And she did a lot of that. So that's my style.
Well, there's a lot of hell being raised all over the country right now, and it's coming from all quarters. What is it that ails us these days?
Well, a real economic depression for ordinary families. I know technically it's not a depression. They even claim it's not even a recession yet. But those are terms for economists. For regular folks just trying to, you know, put three squares a day on the table, it's a stretch. This is a reality. College students, of course, knocked down. It's become unaffordable to try to go to college for most people, most young people in this country. It's a problem for the working families who've seen our wages stagnate or actually fall. Income has gone down. The middle class is plummeting down into poverty. So there's a real issue, and yet our leadership, so-called, in Washington and on Wall Street, doesn't really seem to give a damn. Of course, they're, you know, comfortable, and so they're not feeling the squeeze. And as you know, Lynn, too many politicians today don't really know people. When they come into a place, they do fundraisers. They don't go, say to farmers markets or go down mm-hmm. to the barbershop or go to where people, regular people are. And they don't, you know, have lunch with those people, or they don't know what's going on. They know it technically, you know, they see it in the news, the New York Times, but they don't experience it. And so there's a huge reality gap, I would call it, in our country, between the few who are doing well, say the top 10%, particularly, of course, the one percenters, and then especially particularly the 1/100th of one percenters. That's your multimillionaire class. That's about, by the way, less than 15,000 families in the country. But they have seen their share of America's income just triple in the last decade, while the 90% majority have seen their incomes go down.
Right. Well, you mentioned the 99%. Let's talk about that a little bit, the Occupy movement. This has been in front of us for a pretty long time now. But last week we watched as many of these Occupy sites were cleaned out. The people there were evicted. The tents were moved away. The area was essentially purged. Let's talk about the demonstrations. What do the people who are there, they're angry, they're unhappy. So many Americans are. But if we want to be moved by the Occupy movement, what is it they want? If they had a list, what are the things that they want to see happen? Here
well,
in the United States.
They want, you know, the very fundamentals that that this country stands for. They want economic fairness, social justice, equal opportunity for all people. They want what the founders wanted, and I don't mean just Jefferson and Adams and Madison and the boys, but I mean the regular people back in those days wanted. And that is a chance to do better. And we've our country has turned away from that chance. Our country, you know, at least we used to, you know, we never quite got to egalitarianism, but at least we pursued it. And now our leadership, again, corporate as well as governmental, seems to have given up on that. That no, we can't even try that. Our leaders have become incredibly small. I just my last issue of the Lowdown, my political newsletter that you mentioned, the Hightower Lowdown. That's what I address. That there's an incredible shrinking of America by our leaders. They say, well, we can't do high speed rail.
Right, we can't be expansive.
Yeah, we can't have health care for everyone. We can't have universal college education or at least universal pursued, whether that's technical schools or mm-hmm. college. We can't. They're small, yet the American people are big, and Americans want to build. Why aren't we building a green energy economy? Not just little dabs of it, but I mean a crash course like we did with the moonshot in the 1960s. That's what Americans want to strive for again, be part of something big. And our leaders are too small for that. So that's what the Occupy movement is basically saying. They may be too small, but we're not. And we're willing to go into the streets and have these camps. You know, but, Lynn, they can have the police come in and sweep those people out. And by the way, there are a bunch of places where they're not being swept out. They're still there. Here in Austin, Texas, for example, Nashville, Tennessee, all across the country. It's not just in New York and Los Angeles, but all across the country, some 600 communities have some form of Occupy.
Yeah.
You can't sweep it away because it's an idea. You know?
Right.
So it's not going to go away. And I'm not talking about just the people who are intense, but the majority of Americans who say that they support what these people are talking about. You know, the American people, the pundits and the elites, they say, well, we can't figure out what they want, you know. what do they stand for, you know? Uh-huh. Well, they've got Wall Street in their name. Start with that.
Yes.
So,
let me ask you, though. Well, first let me remind listeners that this is the Lynn Rivers Show here on 89.1 WEMU, and my guest today is Jim Hightower. We're talking about change, social, political, constitutional change. Jim, when you were talking about sort of this sentiment that's out there, and forgive the metaphor, but you know, if you have gunpowder and it goes off, it has, you know, it has sort of unreliable effect.
Yeah.
If you put it in bullets, you get a certain precision with it. How do we channel this energy? How do we take this discontent, this unhappiness, and turn it into real change?
By us listening to them, by us working with them to organize, they've got to do that. We can't channel it. I mean, in terms of Occupy specifically, I mean they've been the spark that has ignited this, but the ignition is the majority of people, the workaday majority in our country. They feel this, and they know it to be true. So that's why Occupy is important. It's not just a matter of some tents here and there. But they're going to decide, the Occupy movement itself will decide kind of what to do with it. They're already talking about big specifics, like let's have a constitutional amendment to get corporate money out of our politics.
Jim McGovern is going to be on my show right after you.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And he's great. He introduced H.R. 88, a resolution that says corporations are not people, and they do not have the same political rights as human beings do. So that's a very powerful thing, and Jim McGovern's one of the great members of Congress. You know, sometimes we forget that, Lynn. We do have great champions, you know, who are in politics, who are actually doing good and advancing the progressive cause. We just don't have quite enough of them, and that's our challenge.
Well,
we've got to elect more of them.
One of the things that concerns me is, you know, we're seeing in young people, we're seeing this idealism, we're seeing this this desire for change, this sort of commitment to an effort, but a lot of the young people that I interact with at the two colleges I teach at, they are exceedingly just disenchanted and suspicious of the political process.
Right.
If they may even be hostile to it.
Yes.
And that's the real question, is the way our Constitution is built, the way our system is built, we make change through the political process. But if people are going to deliberately absent themselves from the political process, how do you get more supportive members into Congress, into those decision-making places that are going to be the drivers for this change?
Well, they have to come to that, and they will. I mean, you know, they distrust it for good reason, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
I'm an old-time Democrat, and much to the amusement of the people here in Texas, was even elected to a couple of terms in statewide office. I'm a proud Democrat, but I'm not very proud to see my party take the same corporate money that the Republicans do and then refuse to push hard for the interests
of
that
raises people. That raises the issue of change, and I'm trying not to be a crepe hanger here, but you know, the GOP makes it clear that they're not going to be the drivers of change.
Quite the opposite.
The Democrats had a chance and they didn't.
Right.
I mean, how do we make this work?
We find the people who will do it. Elizabeth Warren, running for the U.S. Senate in Massachusetts. Tammy Baldwin, your neighbor up there
in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, running for the U.S. Senate. Norman Solomon, running for the Congress out in Northern California. A fellow named Ilya, whose last name I'm forgetting right now, in a district just outside of Chicago. We have great candidates who are running. Find those whom you can support. And it doesn't have just to be to Congress. What I'm advising people, progressives who are disenchanted with Obama, well, you know, one, vote for Obama, because, you know, I mean, the alternative is going to be awful. But put your energy into somebody, run yourself or run your friend and get behind somebody for city council, for school board, for state legislature. That's where we build, a real progressive movement, and that's where our people power can really make a difference, because those are small enough districts where we can count.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that seems to be uniting or bringing people together from both the left and the right is a recalculation on Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yes.
Claire McCaskill, I see, is promoting the idea, let's stop building infrastructure in those two places and start repairing infrastructure here in the United States. I mean, is that an area that activists should be focusing on, ending the war, redirecting those dollars? Is that, if somebody wants to become active, if they want to be hands-on, is that a productive place to go?
Of course, because, you know, and we keep hearing from both parties in Washington, well, we don't have the money. We just can't do these big things anymore. Well, we do have the money. First of all, the money's on Wall Street. Let's have a transactions tax, a Wall Street tax, a little tiny tax that won't affect regular people who've got some money in their 401k account. But those people who are the big players, the rollers who do millions of transactions by computer, you know, in seconds, not even minutes, those people should be taxed. There's big money there. But as you're saying, I forget how many trillions of dollars it is that we have thrown away in Iraq and in Afghanistan to achieve what? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's bring that money home. And the defense industry is already, you know, the military contractors, they're rushing in to say, no, we can't cut the defense budget. Don't touch that budget, because, of course, that's money going to them, into the pockets of the investors and the CEOs of Lockheed Martin and Boeing and those giant corporations. Well, mm-hmm. Nonsense. Let's take that money and put it into high-speed trains, connecting our population centers, into retrofitting every home in America and every building in America for conservation purposes. There's huge energy savings to be had right there. Plus, we're putting people to work.
Right.
You know, that's the kind of thing. That's the bigness that people are looking for. So, yeah, that's very, very worthwhile. That and the other thing, Lynn, is that you and I have fought for eons, and that is we've got to get this corporate money out of politics.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't, then those kids who are in the streets, they're going to be, you know, 20, 30 years down the road, fighting exactly the same battles we're now fighting.
Right.
Because it's about money, and that's what populism is about. It's about money and power. Who has it and who doesn't?
Right. I want to talk about something else defense-related and money, and that is we just saw the very dreadful and shameful end of the super committee's activities around trying to find a reasonable plan to cut back on the deficit. They finished their work having accomplished nothing, and now we are slated to go to a budget sequester in the very near future, meaning that we're going to make cuts that they couldn't, and they're going to come from both domestic spending, domestic discretionary, and defense. Now, again, as I said, I don't want to be so gloomy, but there are certainly people out there who say, well, in fact, when we reach that point of no return where those cuts are supposed to kick in, that there is going to be an attempt, probably a successful one, to simply protect the defense cuts, the defense spending, and let the domestic spending cuts be made. And there's even a suggestion that because so many Democrats are up for election in the Senate, that they're probably likely to collaborate on this. From your observation point, what do you think?
Well, that's already, being tossed out there, not only by nearly all of the Republican leadership, but also by a number of Democrats, as you indicate, in Washington, who say, no, we can't possibly, allow a 10% cut in the defense or, whatever percentage that they're talking about. So there'll be a push for it, and we already see, right, Joe Biden's in Iraq saying, well, we're not really going to leave, and Maliki, the prime minister over there, says, well, we really do need them here to help us train, so we're going to stay committed there. On and on we go, and now Karzai, who wants to die for Karzai, but that's what Afghanistan war is about. We're trying to prop this creep up. So they're saying, well, we can't really leave there. We're going to move some troops out, but can't actually leave. So we're going to continue. Now we're building up around China. So the wars just go on. We got about six wars going on already.
I was surprised to see that historically there's practically no time in our 200 and some year existence that we were not at war with somebody.
Yeah, we have a permanent war machine that demands tax dollars be funneled down their craw, so that is going to be there. But if they do what you just said, if they say, well, no, we're going to protect defense and cut Social Security and cut everything else, Head Start, then what they're doing is committing political suicide. Both parties are, because the same thing happened when Wall Street greed caused the economic collapse, and then we bailed them out without firing a single executive. Any of them going to jail, there was an eruption. That was where the Tea Party initially came from.
Right, and now we find that we gave even more money to Wall Street and the banks than anybody ever knew at the time.
Exactly, trillions of dollars. So that has caused that's the sort of spark of the deep anger that was initially the Tea Party, although they ended up being co-opted by Dick Armey and the Republican operatives. But now the Occupy movement focused on the exact same thing. So now if they do this, then there's going to be another eruption. So they're just fueling this outrage in America that is building up to something big. It's not just Occupy. In January, I was out at the California desert, Palm Springs, with the Koch brothers. They were having one of their billionaires' political retreats out there, and we had more than 2,000 uninvited guests, protesters, confront them out there. They were stunned to be caught in their little lair of luxury out there. So that was a very interesting phenomena that happened there. And then in March came the rebellion in Wisconsin. I was there at that huge political rally where we had more than 150,000 people protesting at the state capitol in Wisconsin. I hadn't seen something like that since the Vietnam War protest days, Lynn.
Amazing, the sit-in.
Yeah, and then I there were tractor cades going around, so it wasn't just, teachers or unions, that's what they tried to say, but it was all kinds of people just poured in. They didn't even have to organize it. They just said, we're going to be here this day, and people came. And I saw a great sign there They had a bunch of handmade signs, of course, and this one sign said, "You screw us, we reproduce."
And, that is a great sign.
Yeah, and that has happened. You know, the Ohio vote last month.
A pretty strong reprimand for John Kasich.
63%. I mean, astonishing. Mm-hmm. And now you've got 76% of Americans say that we need a constitutional amendment. By the way, that includes 68% of Republicans. Constitutional amendments to get corporate money out of politics. So then comes Occupy and more, and then if they do this thing, there's going to be a bigger burst. So more and more people are signing up for this, and you're right, it has to have a political channel, but it's, you know, that's going to come. It's going to develop in its own time, but right now change is coming. Let me take just a moment to tell you a quick story. Mm-hmm. Susan DeMarco and I did in our last book, Swim Against the Current. We told about a tourist who was in Bangkok, and he came out of the Great Temple, and over here on the right-hand side, there was a monk in full regalia, so the tourist snapped a picture and then went over on the other side to buy a bottle of water from a boy to give to the monk, and he paid some money and got the water, but he's waiting for his change, but it wasn't forthcoming, and he thought there was a language problem, so he pointed to his palm and said, "Don't I get change?" And the boy looked up at him, looked over to the monk, then looked back and said in perfect English, "Change comes from within." But that's true. It does come from within. And it's building in the countryside, in the hearts of the American people who know that America is something bigger than Wall Street.
Listeners, this is the Lynn Rivers Show here on 89.1 WEMU. I'm talking today with Jim Hightower, who is an activist, a commentator, and an all-around good guy. So let me ask you, Jim, about this effort is growing, it's swelling. It's focusing on a number of things, but it grows out of the same sense of idealism, the sense of desire for a different kind of country. There's not a leader. In other words, we are not focusing. There's no national figure that folks can rally around. Or do you think there is?
No, I don't. And I don't think that's all bad.
Okay, I mean, that's what I was going to ask. Do you think we need one?
But we have leaders. I mean, we have all sorts of leaders in these public interest organizations, mm-hmm. In just communities.
In journalism?
Journalism. I mean, we are the leaders, and ultimately we will create somebody who will be president, not next time, but, you know, down the road. But right now, mm-hmm. we've got to elect some people to our city councils, to our state legislatures, to our Congress, and build from the ground up. We've got to quit waiting on the powers that be to tell us, "Well, I'm ready to be your leader." That's not going to happen because they're not our kind of leader. We have to create our own.
A lot of people on the liberal side of the aisle supported Obama and are now disappointed with Obama. For lack of a better way to put this, can he be saved? I mean, electorally, can he be saved? But more importantly, can he be moved back to the strong agent for change that he ran as in 2008?
The answer to the first part of that is yes. Can he be saved electorally? And he is being saved essentially by the Republicans.
Yes.
Because they're going to put up, you know, I mean,
yes.
Mitt Romney is the best they have.
Right.
You know? Or Newt Gingrich, I mean.
I've had my time with Newt Gingrich. I'd
yeah,
prefer
right.
not to.
Yeah, you've been up close and personal to that horror story. By the way, he doesn't like being called a lobbyist.
I know, because he's a historian.
He's a visionary.
Yes, he is.
And a PhD, by God, historian. So,
yeah.
But, of course, what he is a Washington influence peddler, and, you know, so he's not going to wash. And of course, our governor here in Texas, you know, Rick Perry, who puts the goober in gubernatorial, you know, as people have now discovered.
Yes, indeed.
You know, they say that the higher the monkey climbs, the more you see of its ugly side.
Uh-huh.
And that happened to Perry. That's going to happen to
Herman Cain, yes.
And Gingrich, too. It's already happening. Okay, so they're going to come up with Romney, who's a venture capitalist, for God's sake, a hedge fund operator. So,
mm-hmm.
Who's cost people jobs and just didn't have a clue about the real world,
mm-hmm.
Who believes, by the way, that corporations are people.
Yes.
So Obama's going to get reelected.
Right.
Second part, I'm not so sure. We certainly have to push that, and I was an Obama supporter. totally sucked in by the notion of the audacity of hope and change, and you know the great speeches that he gave, and a good number of positions, though they were not actually, if you looked at the detail of it, all that strong. But
do you think
we have to? That's why the movement is more important than the politicians. We have to demand it and make it so that Obama cannot ignore the progressive constituents.
So you're really saying we need to create the environment where people
yes.
can be brave,
right?
Where office holders can be brave. Question from your observation point. When Obama came in, he really lacked support in the Senate. In other words, the Democrats in the Senate, we really fell apart, and a significant number of changes, reforms that were being proposed out of the White House end up crashing on the rocks in the Senate. Do you think that if he had more supportive Democrats in the Senate, or the senators that are there became more supportive, that we could begin to address some of those issues or get that kind of change?
Oh, absolutely. And that's where our change is going to come from. It's not going to come from the White House because, you know, Obama made the choice to entrust health care to Max Baucus, for God's sake, the most corporate Democrat other than Chuck Schumer in the entire U.S. Senate. So he handed his landmark piece of legislation to a guy who at the start said, nothing's off the table except single payer, which is the one solution that would work. So that was his fault. But yes, if we have more Bernie Sanders, more Al Frankens, more Barbara Boxers, then I think we can get that with people like Elizabeth Warren. You know, one Elizabeth Warren is going to do a big change.
She's so impressive.
Yeah, because she's not going to be intimidated. She's not going to be controlled by the money. So she's going to say things that other senators are afraid to say. And when she says it, then they're going to be back to the corner saying, well, yeah, you know, actually, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I've been afraid to say it. So it doesn't take, you know, you don't have to have a majority of the Senate to begin to move it in a certain direction. So we can do this.
Well, if you wanted to see one thing happen in the next 6 months that move us down this path, what do you think it should be?
The money in politics, the corporate money. We've got to get that out. That is totally controlling.
Mm-hmm.
So some people say we need a third party. Well, I want us to have a second party. I want it to be the Democratic Party.
Right.
But it means that they've got to get themselves free of the hunt for corporate money. And as you know, they spend an inordinate amount of their time on the telephone,
yes.
calling up lobbyists, calling up corporate interests, and saying, you know, I need your PAC. I need $5,000.
And it sucks. It sucks the soul out of the members, and it sucks the soul out of our democracy.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, Jim Hightower, I want to thank you for joining me today. It's always great to talk with you.
My pleasure, Lynn. Anytime.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That was Jim Hightower, social commentator, activist, populist, and author of Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. He also maintains the website jimhightower.com and publishes the newsletter Hightower Lowdown. This is the Lynn Rivers Show on 89.1 WEMU. My next guest is part of an institution that is the focus of very loud and continuing disdain from both the right and the left, the United States Congress. Representative Jim McGovern is currently serving his 8th term in Congress and is a minority whip. He's the second-ranking member on the powerful House Rules Committee, which sets the terms for debate and amendments on most legislation. And he's a member of the House Agricultural Committee. McGovern is also co-chair of both the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission and the House Hunger Caucus. He's here to talk about his efforts to change the Constitution to make sure that legally recognized persons under the Constitution are, well, actually persons. Congressman McGovern, welcome to the Lynn Rivers Show.
I'm happy to be with you.
Well, Jim, it's so nice to talk with you. So let's get right to this. You've got a proposal to change the Constitution. Give us the briefing. What are you trying to do and why?
Well, basically, it's a constitutional amendment to overturn the Supreme Court's Citizens United ruling that gave corporations the right to free speech. I think as any high school civic student knows, the first three words of the Constitution are we the people, not we the corporations, not we the special interests, but we the people. And I think Supreme Courts have misinterpreted the Constitution over the last couple of decades to give corporations the rights that people have, and sometimes to give people more rights. But this Citizens United case, which allows corporations the right to dump as much corporate money into political campaigns as they want under the auspices that they're utilizing their freedom of speech rights, I think is ridiculous. And I think we need to stand up and push back. There are two ways to change this. Either get a Supreme Court that reverses some of these decisions and interprets the Constitution correctly, or you need a constitutional amendment, basically, that makes it clear that corporations are not people.
So this can't be done legislatively, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we can't pass a law that fixes all this, because it would be challenged in the courts and it would be overturned. So you need to get the courts to change some of their decisions and interpret the Constitution in a way where they don't give corporations the same rights as people, or you have to go the route of a constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm. You know, it surprises me that I went back and looked at the sort of the genesis of this personhood issue for corporations. And the case that it came out of in 1886, it was not a focus of the question. It essentially was an offhand comment by one justice who said, oh, and by the way, we recognize corporations as persons. And somehow that wormed its way into our jurisprudence, and it now is seen as a not only a settled legal issue, but now constitutional in nature.
Well, and as I remind people all the time, corporations are not people. They do not breathe. They do not have children. They don't go to war in Afghanistan and Iraq. They don't die in war. I mean, they are essentially artificial entities which we create, which we the people create. And as such, we govern them, and not the other way around. And I think one of the frustrations that I hear when I'm back in Massachusetts, is this, you know, constant, anger that, you know, Washington seems to not be doing anything that impacts the lives of average people, but instead we're doing everything we can to protect corporate tax breaks and corporate special interest legislation. And you know, I mean, it's everything seems all messed up. And I think one of the reasons why is because we have given corporations as entities way too much power, and they're running this country.
Mm-hmm. I have the text of the amendment here. Let me run through this so listeners know what we're talking about. The text reads, "We the people who ordain and establish this Constitution intend the rights protected by this Constitution to be the rights of natural persons. The words people, person, or citizen as used in this Constitution do not include corporations, limited liability companies, or other corporate entities established by the laws of any state, the United States, or any foreign state. And such corporate entities are subject to such regulation as the people, through their elected state and federal representatives, deem reasonable, and are otherwise consistent with the powers of Congress and the states under this Constitution." And you go on to say that nothing contained herein shall be construed to limit the people's rights of freedom of speech, freedom of the press, free exercise of religion, freedom of association, and all other rights of the people, which rights are inalienable. It seems pretty straightforward here. It
sounds like common sense to me.
Yes, it does. So talk to us about the procedure now. What happens? What's the process for changing the Constitution? I know it isn't easy.
Yeah, the process is that, you know, we have to have a vote in the House and the Senate, two-thirds vote, both the House and the Senate, and then we need three-quarters of the states to approve it through a referendum.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be a time limit on states' approvals, or there might not be. It depends on how, you know, what Congress decides.
Did you, in the amendment as written, do you have a time limit?
No, we don't.
Okay, so it's open-ended.
It's open-ended. And I think most people, when they read this amendment, say to themselves, well, why do we even need an amendment? Who could possibly interpret things any differently than what is stated in the legislation that I put forward? But the fact is that our courts over the years, you know, have continuously decided cases in which they afford corporations the same rights and in some cases even more rights than people. And it's not just the Citizens United case. Recently a federal judge blocked the Food and Drug Administration from requiring tobacco companies to place graphic warning labels on cigarette packages, arguing that cigarette makers have the right to free speech. Well, people who work for these cigarette companies, you know, have those rights, but the company itself, the corporation itself, doesn't. and we ought to be able to govern, these corporations. Mm-hmm. People ought to have control, and right now we don't. And again, I think, you see it in the way this country is moving. It's moving in a direction that continuously empowers the very wealthy and corporate interests at the expense of working people and people struggling to get in the middle class.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, this is the Lynn Rivers Show. We are broadcasting here at 89.1 WEMU. My guest today is Representative Jim McGovern from Massachusetts. He sits in the United States House of Representatives, and he has recently introduced a constitutional amendment to strip corporations of personhood, to actually say that the Constitution protects people, right, not companies. So let's go back to the process for a minute. You said that it's going to take two-thirds support in both houses,
right,
which means there's going to have to be bipartisan support for,
right,
this. How is that going? Do you have co-sponsors?
Well, we just introduced the bill right before Thanksgiving, and
mm-hmm.
Walter Jones, a Republican of North Carolina, has already joined on with me to give this a kind of a bipartisan flavor. And we've gotten about five or six other members have come on since then, and we have a dear colleague out trying to solicit support. I think what members of Congress who are reading my dear colleague for the first time asking for support of this amending the Constitution is a big deal.
Right.
We don't do that kind of stuff lightly. And we're getting lots of questions, and we're hopefully providing people with answers, and I expect the co-sponsorship list will grow and grow and grow.
Mm-hmm.
We need people to call their members of Congress to say, please get on the McGovern bill. It's HJRES 88 is the number of the bill. But, one of the things that I hope that this bill will do will be to encourage a discussion on this issue. We'll encourage a discussion on the fact that corporations are being afforded the same rights as people. Is that what we really want? And what is the impact, on the health and well-being of our country and on our democracy by affording corporations these rights of personhood? And I think that discussion would be very, very helpful. Would be very, very useful at this particular time in our history.
Well, we have a huge freshman class there now. A lot of them came in as Tea Party candidates. The Tea Party, in general, has been pretty hostile to both big government and big business. So it seems like many of those people who have gotten support from that corner or that quarter may be amenable to this kind of thing.
Yeah, and you would think, but the leadership, the Republican leadership, of the House of Representatives right now, is very, very much beholden to corporations. The amount of money going into political campaigns and into political parties is unreal. If we took all that money and put it toward ending hunger in America, we could end hunger in America. But it is just the amount of resources coming in from corporate special interests is overwhelming, and I think their leadership doesn't want to jeopardize those resources. Because look, if you do what we're suggesting here, you will give Congress the ability to vote to get money out of politics. And if you take money out of politics, then it becomes up to the people to decide who governs them. It's not going to be who has the most money. It's going to be elections based on issues and based on the people's choice. And
what a refreshing thought.
Right. Well, and the status quo is very nervous about going down that road.
Exactly.
And the people in power right now are a little bit nervous about this, but I think it's catching on. And I'll tell you, I've talked to liberal audiences and conservative audiences, and when I bring this issue up, everybody kind of nods their head. Why would this be a bad idea? Why would it be a bad idea to say people matter more than corporations, that people have rights, corporations do not have the same rights as people, they do not govern people, we govern corporations.
Mm-hmm. What has been the response? I know you just dropped this, but what has been the response beyond Congress? Have you heard from state legislators? Have you heard from people in other parts of the country?
Yeah, I have it. If people go to jimmcgovern.com, that we have a petition drive going on. And we have been getting, thousands of people signing up, on our petition, which we are, passing on to members of Congress here. So the support is growing in Massachusetts. You know, we're planning some events, you know, with state officials to try to raise this issue and to get state buy-in mm-hmm. to the possibility of this amendment moving forward. But look, this is, you know, I mean, we have this Occupy Wall Street movement that has, you know, sprung up all over the country and all over the world, but all over this country here, and which I think is refreshing that people, are finally standing up and saying enough.
Enough.
Reminds
right.
me of that scene from the movie Network where, Peter Finch says, "I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to
take it anymore.
I think we're kind of at that point. But, you know, this is, I think this complements, you know, a lot of the issues that they are raising. You know, look, people matter. You know, people ought to matter. You know, we ought to be concerned, you know, about the average person in this country and not just about the people who have lots of money or these big corporations. And so I think, you know, the more we talk about this, I mean, it's contagious. People are signing on. People are getting it. And I think, I think the support's going to grow. But that discussion, this discussion about, you know, whether corporations deserve personhood, that's a discussion that we ought to be having in the halls of Congress.
Absolutely. Now, at your website, you have a place for people to sign
right.
on. Do you give them any advice on how to contact other members of Congress?
Well, once they sign into the petition, we're going to keep people informed as this legislation goes forward, and you know, and events are going to happen, so they can they can follow as this
mm-hmm.
legislation moves forward.
So what you hope that people would do as they hear about this is call their own representatives,
absolutely, call
their
own
senators.
And say, let's do this. Get on this. We want you to be a co-sponsor. If they have any questions, they can call my office. But, if they go to jimmcgovern.com, they can get all the information, and we will keep them informed. But, look, if this is going to happen, it's going to be because of a grassroots movement
right.
to demand that Congress take action.
Well, Everett Dirksen said that nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come.
Absolutely. I think this is an idea
whose time has come.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So outside of Congress, are there other groups that are supporting you? Is Common Cause coming in? Are there other groups that are going to push for this effort, are going to be helpful?
There's a group called Free Speech for People, which is supporting this. And, and there are a lot of other groups that are, you know, that have expressed interest in coming on board. You know, This is a comprehensive bill, so it applies, you know, to corporations and nonprofits and everything in between. This basically, you know, and there's no carve outs in here for any entity. You know, this basically says that people have rights, period, and people should control, you know, their own destiny and the destiny of this country, and should, you know, be responsible for, you know, determining, you know, the future of this country.
Mm-hmm.
So. You know, so there are, you know, groups are starting to come on board as well.
Good. Listeners, this is the Lynn Rivers Show right here on 89.1 WEMU, and I'm talking today with Representative Jim McGovern. He's a member of Congress from Massachusetts, and he has recently introduced an amendment to the U.S. Constitution that would strip corporations of personhood. Jim, you mentioned the Occupy movement, and if you would permit me, I'd like to ask a little bit about some of the other things that you do in Congress.
Sure.
And a lot of them are people-centered. You are on the Human Rights Commission, are your co-chair,
right.
and also the House Hunger Caucus. As you see this corporate influence, how does that affect issues like hunger, human rights?
Well, look, we're having this big debate over how we reduce our debt, and the way this corporate influence is affecting things is that tax breaks for corporations, giveaways to big oil companies are all off limits, and so increasingly you have members of Congress looking at programs like SNAP and nutrition programs to help keep people fed in this country, you know, looking at those programs as a way to balance the budget. The last thing we should touch are programs that provide a circle of protection for people. And, there are millions of people in the United States of America who are hungry. or it's not a community.
I don't think people really believe that. They don't understand the depth of this problem.
Absolutely. Well, you know, people should go to their food banks or their food pantries, and you look at the line of people, you know, who are looking for food in those places. The numbers of people who are enrolled in SNAP, or the food stamp program, has skyrocketed as this economy has gotten worse. And you know, there's not a community, not a congressional district in this country that is hunger free. And I think that's shameful. I mean, I always tell people there are some problems that we can't solve in my lifetime, but hunger isn't one of them. I mean, it's a political condition. We have all the resources, we have everything we need except the political will to end it. And you know, to those who are obsessed with, you know, the deficit, I would remind them that there is a cost to society for hunger, not just the cost in terms of providing benefits like SNAP, but kids can't learn if they're hungry. Lost productivity. There are avoidable medical costs that are involved. So it's billions and billions of dollars that is costing this country because we have more and more people who are hungry. And I think that the priorities in Washington right now are all messed up.
Well, I'm going to give you a chance to say it. Do you believe that there is a direct connection to the loss of human services in this country because of how much money corporations are able to pour into the system and put their agenda forward?
I do, and I do for this reason. There are members of Congress who can vote to cut the programs that provide the circle of protection for people, and there is absolutely no political consequence. You know, you vote to go after a subsidy for oil companies, or you want to close a corporate tax loophole, and there is a political consequence. And so I do think that there's a correlation between this increasing corporate power and the fact that we're turning our backs, you know, on the most vulnerable in this country. I mean, government, is here first and foremost to help the people who need help. You know, Donald Trump doesn't need government as much as some guy who's out of work, you know, who can't find a job, you know, and is trying to put food on the table for his family. So the priorities down here are all messed up. And we've been debating things here like, you know, reaffirming our national motto. And we debated a bill a couple of weeks ago to make it easier to carry concealed weapons, for unsafe people to carry concealed weapons from state to state. But, you know, those things don't matter to anybody. What we should be talking about is how we end hunger in this country, how we end poverty in this country, how we put people back to work, you know, and how we put people first. And it really is dispiriting to be on the floor of the House of Representatives and watch the kind of meaningless stuff that gets brought up, stuff that doesn't mean anything to anyone.
Are you hopeful that the sort of populism that is sweeping across the country, both from the Occupy movement and to some extent from the Tea Party movement, are you hopeful that that's going to turn into real political change?
I am hopeful. If I wasn't, believe me, I would walk away from all of this and move to a desert island and pick coconuts the rest of my life. But I am hopeful. This country is resilient. And when you look at the history of this country, some incredibly wonderful things have happened. You know, whether it's the creation of Social Security or the Civil Rights Movement, or I go right down the list. And I believe that this country will rise again to that kind of level of commitment to helping people. And I tell people all the time who are dispirited or who are frustrated, you know, then get up, you know, and fight back. I mean, this country's worth fighting for, and people need to take this country back away from these special interests.
Jim, thank you so much for talking with me. It's great to hear from you, and good luck on your efforts.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Listeners, please join me next week for another edition of the Lynn Rivers Show, when we'll talk about the news, politics, history, or a mixture thereof. Radio that makes you think. The Lynn Rivers Show, right here on 89.1 WEMU.